gin joints in all the towns in all the world.
You're listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Hey girl, a martini, shaken, not stirred.
Don't try and church it up, son.
You can't handle the truth.
I am big. The picture that got small.
Your first one's on us.
Welcome to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling. I'm your host, Mark Rigadonna, and with me, as always,
Richie Bird, and what a show we have today!
I am so pumped up. I feel so clear-headed. I'm so excited.
We were laughing backstage. We were just backstage with the guest, and she had us on the floor.
We're laughing, we're having a good time, and we totally were so, like, oh shit, we should be doing this on live.
I'm like, stop talking and wait for us to introduce you. So how are you, Mark?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. It's a sad day.
Uh-oh.
I hate to say that,
another sad one.
It's not that sad, though. What's up, Brian Flammer, Tom Bannis? What's up? 50 years ago today, the greatest band in the history of music broke up. The Beatles broke up 50 years ago today. How about that?
I was alive. You were alive. You were, just hitting 30.
I was coming in my own. And the Beatles broke up 50 years ago. I think that's quite interesting.
Were you a huge Beatles fan? How old were you when they broke up?
I was only 6 when they broke up. But when I turned about around that age, it's a whole long story that I'm not going to get into. But I got turned on to the Beatles. So, like, I started listening to early Beatles when I was, like, 7 years old because my dad brought home their first album. So, I just slowly, even though they broke up right when I started listening to them.
They were new.
For the next 7 years, I listened to them almost exactly as the albums came out only 7 years later. You know what I mean? So I had a babysitter. He was a huge Beatles fan, so he would come over with Sgt. Pepper and talk to me, when I was like 10. And, that was such – the 70s was such an amazing time for music, man. It really was. It was
– yeah.
I was young, but it was such a great time. I discovered Zeppelin. I mean, look at Zeppelin. Look at Black Sabbath. Those bands still sound today like if you put them out today – they'd work. They'd sound fresh and new. When they were making music in the 70s, you go 50 years back, that's the 20s.
Yeah.
Think about that. Music from the 20s to the 70s changed so much. But from the 70s to now, you could put a lot of those bands out today and people go, oh my God, this band is so new and fresh,
Well, do you remember when Kanye West did the song with Paul McCartney? And all these people are like, I don't know who this Paul McCartney is, but he's about to blow up.
I went to see McCartney with my friend and his daughter. And his daughter knows McCartney. She was a kid, but she knew. But McCartney did that song. And 5-6 seconds to what the hell's the name of the song? I can't remember. And when that song came up, when he started doing that song, she went berserk. You know what I mean? It was so funny. She goes, oh, that's that guy. It's that guy.
This old man got to do a song with Kanye. That's nice before he passes away. Let him have one hit.
So that's our little tidbit of the day. The Beatles broke up 50 years ago today.
Well, we had who do you think the biggest Beatles fan we've had on the show so far?
Aside from me?
Yes. Well, yeah. We've had a lot of Beatles talk on our show.
Well, we had the Beatles, the one guy I really wanted to talk to, and all he did was talk about spirituality and pissed me off.
I know exactly what you're talking about, John Fugel's.
Yeah.
All you wanted was Beatles stories, and he started talking about Jesus, and you were like, didn't you know the Beatles are bigger than Jesus?
You got John Fugelsang on the show, and I knew this, that John Fugelsang did the last televised interview with George Harrison before Harrison died.
You were so excited about that.
I couldn't believe that he was coming on our show. And he was great on our show, but we talked about everything but the Beatles.
It's the curse. If you have a plan in your head, it never goes as planned.
Brian Flammer wrote, my sister was amazed that McCartney was in a band before Wings, which
Can I tell you, and I know this is sacrilege, but I like Wings more than the Beatles.
Well, you gotta remember that.
I grew up when Wings were playing.
You gotta remember that I was 13, 14, 15 years old. I adored Wings. Band on the Run's one of the greatest albums ever.
It's like three songs in one.
The greatest album, though. The greatest, to me, Maybe I'm Amazed, is one of the most amazing songs ever written. You know, I love Paul McCartney. I love Wings. I have no problem with that.
Who's your favorite Beatle?
I'm a huge what?
Who's your favorite Beatle?
You know, when I was a kid, I loved Lennon. I was Lennon, all Lennon, Lennon. You know what? I know why. Because when I was younger.
You were a tortured artist.
Well, I thought that. But I couldn't hit Paul's notes when I could sing John's notes.
That's why I like Ringo. I can play the same beats.
But then as I got older, I just was like, you know, I always felt Paul took a bad rap because it's not just like my brother always says, and he's not even a big Beatles fan. My brother always says, people always said John Lennon was the word guy and Paul was the music guy. And he goes, Paul McCartney wrote Eleanor Rigby, case closed, you know, and it's true. I mean, it's an amazing song. It's just, you know, just a great song. So I love both, you know, and then now it's funny, when I got in my 50s, I realized how really amazing George Harrison was.
Well, so I was about to say, I am a George Harrison probably first, and then
thanks,
Paul
Tom,
McCartney
thanks for
right underneath.
What?
I like Harrison, and then McCartney's right underneath. Then there's a huge gap to Lennon.
You know what? Really? You know what a lot of people don't know? The first number one song by...
And if you play it backwards, it says that they worship the devil?
No, it was Ringo had the first hit.
I bet.
He did. Was it Only You or it was one or Photograph? I think it was Photograph. He had the first number one after the Beatles broke up. Isn't that wild?
Yeah. Oh, did you see what Paul wrote? Paul?
I said, yeah.
Wings is the band the Beatles could have been. Alan, that is awesome. That's I love that. Because the Beatles, if you think about it, when they first hit the U.S., they were like popcorn, bubblegum. I want to hold your hand.
You know, you say that because you're listening to the music now. But
but that was the music then. But what I'm saying, I know the point you're going to make, but what I'm saying is, they went from that, then they got stoned and heard the Beach Boys, and then all of a sudden they became the Yellow Submarine, well, Sergeant Pepper, like crazy. Yeah. Like they went through such a woo.
We could do 12 hours on the Beatles here, and people would be like writing and going nuts. Brian Fleming's phone died. Great. But I think we got to get our guest out here.
He's one of our favorites. Yes, and we'll definitely have an opinion on the Beatles because she knows music more than anybody I know, and she's also has an opinion more than anyone I know.
I took a voice class with her mother-in-law.
Really? She's a great singer.
We can talk about that.
We're going to bring her out to a special video.
Okay, cool.
Bring her out to a video, and then we'll introduce her when she hits the deck.
I'm not doing the birthdays anymore. When you consider a 50-year-old a younger man, what's to celebrate? The difference between like young people sex and old people sex is that young people can go for hours, not old people. You do 10 minutes, you could die.
Folks, one of the performers, the producer, our favorite person on the planet, Carol Montgomery's in the house.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
What's up?
You're the Baldwin of Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling. You hold the record for the most appearances.
I said the Tom Hanks, but I like Alec Baldwin. Yes. This is your fourth show.
Is it really? Gosh. Yeah.
We love you so much.
You know what happened is, out letting the viewing audience know, that when we were doing the shows at the comic strip, we would bring in somebody and we'd do a show.
Right.
And we weren't live, so we... If we had a good time with them, we'd go, let's do another show.
Right.
And we had such a good time with you that we kept spending
the whole day together.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Everyone in your audience should know that we're all very close. We've known each other a very long time.
Yes.
Two of my favorite guys. And wow. I don't like, and I don't like anybody. So.
You're one of my favorite guys.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's only because my dick is bigger than yours.
She's got the biggest one.
I would have appreciated if you didn't have to prove it all the time.
Well,
she keeps funking it on the table.
Carol, I have to tell you something.
Yes.
She takes out just enough to beat me.
You got to tell that story now. You have to tell the story of where that comes from.
Milton Girl.
Yeah. You got to tell the story for the audience.
Howard Stern. Because Milton Berle was famous for having the biggest dick in show business.
Right.
And Howard Stern, when he was on Stern kept going, come on, let me see it. And he goes, come on, if I take mine out, will you take yours out? And Berle said, you take yours out and I'll take out just enough to beat you.
Greatest line.
And the best is, the rumor is he had the biggest dick and is the biggest dick.
Yes. He was not a nice man. Not a nice man.
But Carol,
yes.
Last week, I was laying on the couch right here and watching the TV right there.
Yes.
And it was like 2 a.m. and I'm switching around and I'm like, should I go to bed? I'm like, I got nothing to do. Got nothing to do tomorrow.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, bam, I'm going through Showtime, and there it is. Funny Women of a Certain... I go, oh, my God, I got to watch this.
You were getting ready for it. You were getting ready for the second taping when we had you on the podcast.
That's right.
You didn't even have the lineup secured.
Nope.
That's pretty awesome. It's up. Yeah. It's
I lost two of them out.
Huh?
Oh, Richie lost us, but we still have you, Richie.
I can see you, Richie.
Yeah, we can see you.
You guys are like...
There goes Richie.
There we go. Richie, where'd you go?
Richie and technology is...
that's one of the things we were going to give him shit about. But I wanted to hear him tell me how great the special was.
We'll pause that. Let's talk Beatles while we wait for Richie.
It was, first of all, it was so funny to hear him talking about the Beatles. Because you must know the story that Lane learned how to read and write from the Beatles when he was a little boy.
Lane's Carol's son, for anyone who doesn't know.
Yes.
And Carol's son is my brother.
Yes. And, yes, he is. And he's 28 years old now. He used to look at the albums that my husband had of the Beatles, and he would learn how to write the titles of the album. Like, he'd write all the songs down. And what was funny was, this is when I lived in Vegas, so... We went to go do a radio show, and he was with me. I forget why he was with me, but he was 4 years old, and we're on the radio, and he sat there. He was very quiet, and at one point I said, my son's a huge Beatle fan, and so Lane said, can you play the song? It's on the White Album, track 4, and the DJ goes, that's not track 4, and Lane and him start fighting. He's 4 years old at the time. And he said, I'm telling you, it's track 4. And then we ended up doing something. We ended up leaving the studio, and we put the radio on. And the first thing the DJ said was, that damn kid was right. It was track 4.
I'm back.
Thank God.
Can I just tell you guys something?
Denise.
So I drop out, and I'm trying to get back in.
Right.
And I get a text from our brilliant producer, Joey St. John. And here's the text. You ready? You dropped out. Thank you. You've been a big help, Joey.
Well, the bye. Oh,
I forgot he has control over everything. He's like God up there.
So tell me about you watching the special.
Yeah,
it was the second one.
Okay.
And I go, let me watch. Well, and bam, out you come. And I'm like, that's my girl. That's my girl. And then Carol Leifer went on and just crushed. And then you went on and just destroyed.
Thanks.
And then
Julia.
Julia.
No, she closed, didn't she?
No. Well, she was third on this.
Yeah, then, they edited it.
Julia closed that night?
Yeah.
Julia was phenomenal.
Wasn't she great?
And then Tammy was great. And then I fell asleep.
Oh, okay.
So I still got to watch the rest.
You got to watch Thea and Caroline. Everyone just you know, knocked it out of the park, man. All the girls.
Yeah.
I worked with Julia just recently, and she was saying during the taping, she had to go on after Thea.
Yes.
And she goes, I was so scared and so nervous. And I was like, you know what? I just got to do it. And she went out and she said, she goes, you know me, I never admit when it goes well, but it went well. I was like,
yeah.
Julia,
yeah, no, it was so funny because I said to her, you know, remember, not only am I in the show, but I created the show and I was also the executive producer. And I knew she didn't want to follow her. And I took her aside and I said, are you going to trust me? You've trusted me on every single thing we've done. Because she was originally supposed to be in the first special.
Now, I missed it though. Who was she supposed to follow?
Thea Vidal.
Oh, okay. I missed it.
Yeah, and Julia was supposed to be in the first special, and then she got sick, and then she had. So I said, and when we got the green light for the second special, I said to Showtime, "Well, we're putting Julia back on, correct?" And they were like, "Absolutely." I said, "Are you going to trust me?" And she said, "Yes." I know she was scared. I said, "I'm telling you, you are going to destroy." And she had the set of her life.
I'm going to write her and tell her that she was just, I didn't know that story, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, she's killing it, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing I'm proudest about, because everybody that I've, even the first special was the same way. I mean, they were just such killer comics.
Yeah.
And it's just like, go out, just do your set. Don't think about what everyone else is doing. Just do it, man. And those are the signs of pros. You know what I mean? You know this. We've all followed each other and gone, do they have to do that fucking well? Do they have to do that well?
You're going to make me work tonight?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
The most nervous I ever was is I think you and I were in the Outer Banks and I had to follow you. I was like, oh, shit.
But I was saying on an Instagram that you're always happy when somebody you are friends with in the business comes up with something and runs with it and bam, there it is.
And it was not only perfect timing, you guys pulled it off so wonderful for the theme of it being. And it was about time that they did a theme of the women of a certain age.
Yeah.
You know, it was really perfect timing and deserved.
Right.
Thank you.
But you go, okay, I'm so happy for my friend. This is great. And the other side of you is going, oh, good, it's my friend. They'll use me in it. And you had to come up with the one fucking concept. Get me in, Carol.
Richie, let me talk about your tits, all right? You could do it.
They're very supple.
Oh, or
come
as
on,
I like
Richie.
To call it Tuesday. But
I had a funny idea of, like, going into the audition when you're like as one of the things wearing a wig and a dress, and you'd be like, Mark, and they're like, look, nobody likes white dudes no more.
Yeah,
I need some.
We can't get work.
I think the Fu Manchu might give you away though, Mark. I'm just saying.
I'm Sicilian.
No, look, I was very lucky. I shouldn't say I was very lucky.
You're not lucky. It was deserved, and you paid more than the amount of dues you needed to.
And Carol, you're another one. And then you can talk where we were saying this about Vic Henley. Carol's another one where you walk in a room and she's there, and you go, "Oh, good, Carol's here."
Aww.
You know, you do. You just and everybody feels that way. I mean,
every major step in my career, any little step I've taken that moved me forward, Carol was part of it. So
the only one who ever said bad things about you was Steve Cruiser.
Yeah, he hates you. We were going to play the clip from Maria Walsh in the house. We were going to play that clip from that Felicia shot when we went to Iraq.
Oh, yeah.
And Cruiser goes, great. I'm going into Iraq with the loudest Jew in the country.
And now when we were, do you remember? So I don't know if you know this story, Richie. So the first time we go into Iraq, none of us knew what we were doing. So we get into Kuwait and we didn't know that we had to go through customs or, you know, immigration and everything. And I'm the leader of the group. So I'm trying to find somebody to talk to me and nobody would fucking talk to me because I was a woman.
Wow. Yeah.
So I had to go grab Steven Cruiser.
She was going to grab me, but she needed a man.
Yeah, exactly.
Steve Cruiser, who no one would talk to because he's an asshole.
Right. But I had to. He had to be my man. I love you, Steven. He had to be my man.
Wow.
And he was laughing.
He loved every second of that. Hold on, Carol. Let a man handle this.
One of my favorites.
I gotta ask you. So what did you like the cold open that I did for the special?
I loved it. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I really did. I did. Oh. It was great.
I wanted to do that. I want, because you know, and you both of you guys know this, is that in our business, whenever you're successful, everyone says, oh, they got lucky. So that's why I did the show. I don't know. Mark, you haven't seen it yet, right?
I haven't seen it. I don't have Showtime. I want to see it so bad.
Well, basically what I did is I said, welcome to the second special. And then I stop and I go, I know you guys thought this was a one-off. I said, you know, I'm 61 years old. Maybe I get a pity fuck, but I don't get a pity special.
Yeah.
This is not a one-night stand.
Right. And then it goes right into the show, because it was really important, because you know there are people that were thinking that.
Yeah. I think that's true most of the time. I don't know that it's true with you.
Anybody who knows you knows.
I don't know. Carol, I didn't. You and I met years later. We had a million mutual friends.
That's we did.
We met. And the biggest was Steve Cruiser.
Right.
And I couldn't believe how many people who I knew and loved and respected in his business. If your name came up, it was like, oh, Carol Montgomery. So I don't know that anybody in there are a lot. Like if Rick Adana got a special, we'd all be like,
everyone would wonder what the fuck happened. Who did he blow? Real quick, let's play the other clip. We have another clip of yours for the special.
We haven't done the drink of the joke yet.
We'll do that right after, baby. We'll play the other clip, and this is your special that's on Showtime. Make sure you guys watch it.
Yes.
On demand it.
A certain age, because what would the all-male special be called? Congress?
I'm transgendered. I was married when I came out. I said, honey, we have to talk. She's looking at me. She goes, is it another woman?
Listen, my sweet young millennials, you have something that our generation will never have again. Hope.
Man, make sure you guys go to DVR it, demand it.
Well, Spectrum, which is the cable company here, I don't know if they're doing it. They may be doing it with Amazon now. They're doing like 2 weeks free and everything. So many people have seen it because you can get it on Spectrum now.
Oh, good.
So, yeah. And then the next one will be called, the next one we're going to call Even More. And then the fourth one we're going to go even more. We're just going to keep saying more.
Just do one. Women of a certain age with dicks. Just one.
Women of a certain age and Richie.
Here's the sketchy. I won't get on that one either.
True. Very true.
I gotta tell you though. I mean, you not only because you're part of it, but you also tapped into a market that is
absolutely.
It's so great because there are so many funny women who have not got theirs.
Absolutely.
So you're going to discover these women that have been doing comedy for 30 years and giving them their break. Which is just awesome. You're like the female Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh, I should only live that long.
Do that many drugs.
Yeah.
But it's funny because, you know, I'm looking at the list and I go, yeah, I know her. But you realize, nobody else does.
Yeah.
And that's sad, you know?
Yeah.
Well, originally, so Julia was supposed to do the first one and then she got sick. And then Wendy Liebman, she was supposed to do the first one too, and she got hit by a car.
Jesus!
Oh shit!
And so I literally—that's
a tough phone call.
Wait a minute! And like literally, I said to my Showtime guy, I said, "This is the problem when you hire old women. Somebody's going to get fucking hurt." Wendy was supposed to do the second one also, but because We turned around so fast on the second special. I think she just started going back to doing stand up, and it was like 2 years later. She was, she broke both legs.
Oh, man.
So,
yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I want to argue Julia just because she's really only about 10 or 12 years old.
Right. Yeah, but she, when I got the idea, I remember walking. I was going to the theater where they were giving us our show. We have a residency at the Crane Theater. Well, not right now we don't because it's closed. But I remember walking from the East Village, and I called her on the phone, and I said, "I have this idea. I want you to be one of the regulars." And she, of course, jumped at it because we don't get that. But you guys know that. I mean, Mark, you're younger than us, but Richie knows that. You know, ageism.
Ageism is a bitch.
Well, I say that. I say that. I've said that in so many interviews I've gone. If I had to choose between ageism or sexism, I would take a pat on the ass because that at least meant somebody noticed me.
Right. Right.
Can I tell you something crazy though? I saw reverse ageism when I was coming up, because when I started, I was only like 19, 20 years old.
Yep.
And when I'd go up on stage immediately, and Greg Giraldo pointed this out to me, as soon as I'd walk on stage, the audience looked at me like, "What is this young punk know? Like, what does he know?"
Yeah.
And I had to really prove myself. And then as I hit in my like mid 20s and through my 30s, it was like it got easier. But now I'm hitting the end of my 30s. I'm seeing a little bit of I'm the old man now when I go do these shows on the Lower East Side. And I'm like, dude, I'm still in my 30s. And they're like, yeah, whatever, old man.
Oh, yeah.
That's why he hangs out with me.
So he can look young.
Shit, I was going to ask you something. I can't remember how to do with the show. I remember when you came up with this concept and you were starting to tour it and everything. Mm-hmm. And what... Did you see this as the end goal? Was this, did you?
What, the TV?
Or was it just going to be a tour?
No, you know what? I say this whenever I do the live show. I just wanted to work with my girlfriends. I really did. I love you and Mark and maybe two or three other men. I love working with. Even you guys, when do we ever get to work together anymore? Because we're all headlining.
Right. Right.
So I came up with the idea of, oh, well, I'll do this and it'll be a 3-person show where they're all headliners and get to work with my friends. Mm-hmm. But my partner, Dave Goldberg, who is the executive producer with Rob Sia from Killer Bunny, he was the one that said, "I think this is a TV show, Carol." So he came to see the show. I think it was the first show we did at the Crane. And he went, "Oh, my God, let's do this." And, you know, everyone who we pitched it to got it immediately. You know,
really?
When I went, yeah.
Wow, that's half the battle right there.
Yeah, and then the reason I went to Showtime is because they gave me my first break. Because I don't think Mark remembers this, but do you remember the Showtime Comedy Club?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So I was on the All-Stars.
Okay, right.
The one with Don Rickles. And I wanted to bring it back to Showtime.
Like 53, 54?
That was 1942, Richie. Go fuck yourself. Yeah, so that's why I wanted to give it. I wanted to go back to them. And you know what? And this isn't kissing their ass because they know the type of person I am. They were smart enough to go, we have something great here. Mm-hmm. And when we were doing press for the second special, we found out, because you never find out the ratings, you know? We found out that from Showtime's press people, we were the highest rated stand-up comedy special on Showtime for 2019.
Hell yeah. Wow. That's awesome.
That's great.
Yeah. And now with the quarantine, like literally we premiered the weekend that became lockdown. So the numbers probably went through the roof.
Wow. You know the secret of comedy, right? Timing.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm thrilled. You know, and hopefully we'll get another one out of this.
Because we just found out we're the top rated streaming show
in my house.
In Mark's house.
And that's huge.
At this time. Yeah.
It's very huge.
Yeah. So well, in my house, you guys are not even breaking that top 100. I'm just letting you know.
Well, that's why we brought you on. We're hoping to get this thing going one house at a time.
So we're a half hour in, and we haven't done the drink. We haven't done the store. We haven't done any.
Here we go. Let's do it, baby. Richie, what are you drinking?
I'm going back to my old days, Marky. I got my Johnny Black on the rocks.
Johnny Black.
Yeah.
Very nice.
I'm not driving anywhere tonight. So.
Usually you are. I am going with the theme Corona beer.
Yeah. And see what we did there? We did not do the ladies first thing because we're men of a certain age now.
Well, actually, we did do ladies first, Richie. remember Carol's big dick?
Yeah, and I'm not a lady, so really. And I am drinking seltzer.
The thing I love so much, Carol has three drinks: seltzer, red wine, or tequila. And
exactly.
You know which Carol you're getting on what she's drinking.
That's so funny because
when tequila Carol shows up, she's leaving early because she's finding Todd.
That's so funny because I said to Todd, I said, and he's working, he's in the other room, he's working on some music. But I said to him, I said, you better open up a bottle of wine. I want to have a glass of wine with my friends. And he's been busy recording, so I ended up with seltzer. That's so funny. It's seltzer, red wine, or tequila. He knows me too well, Mark.
That is good, Mark.
And by the way, I just to do a plug for the family. So you see the opening of the show, and then you hear the guitar. That's Todd. Todd wrote that. Yeah, Todd wrote that.
Yeah.
And then when you hear the music when we're talking with all the interstitials, that's his song. And then when you hear the credits on the second special, that's Lane's song. So
really?
Nepotism. Nepotism, baby.
That's
the only way to do
great.
It.
You know what? I'm already sleeping with him. I might as well use him, right?
Yeah.
Get what you want out of him.
Yeah, and I do. Yeah, so I'm... But it's great. You know, that's really kind of cool also that they all, because this is what's so great about when you create a show, you forget it's your show. Everyone was like, well, what do you want? I'm like, my husband to write music and my son. And they're like, okay. So,
wow. Oh, that's great. That's really
bingo, bingo.
Yeah.
I was telling Mark that I actually took a couple of voice lessons with your mother-in-law back in the day.
Yes, you did. Back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, your mother was a famous
Broadway pianist and vocal coach and rehearsal pianist and everything. And, you know, Richie is a very good singer.
Yeah. Let's put him on the spot. Sing.
Carol used to write on the Richie Burns Show.
Yes, I did. Wow. God, that was 1912.
We had a lot of fun. Right. We wrote the Satan. Remember Satan? I sold my soul to Satan to get a show. That was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yes. But that was before the 1918 flu pandemic.
Yeah. So we're doing this. I always had more fun with the writing sessions than I did anything else with that. Just sitting around with you guys. You know, it was always so much fun.
And it was such a great show. You should bring it back.
I would, but we're not allowed to be near each other.
That's true.
That's why it's going so well now.
So, Carol, do you have a street joke for us?
I don't. I was thinking about it, but you know what? Honestly, this is the most excitement I've had since I've been locked out. I will tell you. Okay, a street joke. I don't really have a street joke, but I will tell you what it's like being locked down with your husband. Okay, we're fighting. On who takes out the garbage so we can have some alone time. I'm like, let me go to the basement, honey. You don't have to. I've been with my husband now for, how long has it been? 3 weeks? Every goddamn day. So I just want to take the laundry out or to go to the, you know.
You know, we've been locked up too much when I got pissed off at the dog. I told him, I'm like, will you leave me alone? He's under my feet constantly.
Well, what is it like with the kids? The kids must be driving you fucking crazy.
Yes. It was a blessing, and then it became a curse.
Oh, yeah.
It's a blessing again. I at one point during the day, I have to just walk away.
Yeah.
I have to go. I'm sorry. I can't be here right now. I got to go. I will take my chances.
Well, I love when Trump says people have been telling me how happy they are spending time with their family. I'm like, nobody's telling you that.
Nobody said that.
No, but there's nobody who wants to spend time with their family ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's so funny because, you know, I've been doing stand-up forever. So when I think back to when I was first dating Todd and then we got married and everything, the reason the marriage lasted, you know, we celebrated 36 years. The reason the marriage lasted is I was on the road 3 weeks every fucking month. So it's like, and now I see him every day. And I mean, I love my husband, but I'm like, please.
Oh, it's over. It's over.
Yeah. Everybody, divorce lawyers are the only people that are going to make out from this.
They are.
They're going to clean up.
Yep. They are excited right now. I'm hating Mark. And we just do this for an hour every night. I'm fucking
1 hour a night is enough, Richie Byrne.
God damn it, Angie. How do you do it?
I've always asked Angie that.
I'm serious. I had a bunch of friends ask, like, how got to be great, you know, your home or whatever. This is the most I've ever
been home
since I was 18 years old. I've you know, either been doing theater or on the road as a comic since I was 18. Yeah. So I have no idea. Like, wait, I have to be home again tomorrow? When do I leave?
Well, Richie, you must know this, but you know, Mark got married, and then I took him to Iraq.
2 days after the wedding.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And we were. I mean, what was it, like a week later, and we were gone for 2 weeks.
It was like right after the wedding.
Yeah.
Right after the wedding.
So you went on the honeymoon with Mark.
Yes.
Yeah. We had a honeymoon in a war zone. So
It was so lovely. And by the way, I always have to tell this story. Speaking of Mr. Riccadonna, is like, you know, because you guys are, we've never actually, Richard, you and I think have only worked together a couple of times.
Yeah, which is so weird, but yeah.
Yeah, but Mark was working with me. I will not say whose room it was, but let's just say it was in Connecticut, and we got a room, but they only gave the room to the headliner.
Right.
And so I said to Mark, I said, you can stay with me because, you know, Angie knows me, you know, yeah. I mean,
so Todd and Angie, we're all like a big family.
Right.
So,
right. So Mark stays with me, we get two beds, and this man tortured me with his fucking snoring.
I bet. I was going to say, I bet he's a huge fucking, look at him. He's a bear. He's a fucking grizzly bear.
I mean,
I might have snored, but you never felt so safe. You thought you had a grizzly bear protecting the cave.
Snoring and farting. And I called Angie the next day and I said,
he was awake.
I said to Angie, you know what? I give you all the respect in the world. I was ready to fucking kill him.
It's the eighth wonder of the world, Angie, Mary, and Mark.
Yes.
You said you had a great March and April, and it got blown out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because, you know, as comics, we always look at our book and go, okay, well, if
this
I have
month
this,
is good.
This month is good, so that'll tide me over. And April, we were supposed to start the first big date with the Funny Women of a Certain Age at the Dallas Symphony Hall this Sunday, actually. We're supposed to do it on Easter Sunday, and it's been postponed till July. But that was going to be a nice, you know, like, you know this. We all do this. We go, oh, great. Okay, so I have these weeks, and I have these weeks. So May doesn't have to be that big, and June doesn't, because I can, you know, you take the money, and it covers the next few months.
Right.
Well, fuck that, because so I got nothing.
My March, April, and May were loaded, because I was actually going to take the summer, take the foot off the gas, spend time with the family. God had another plan. He said, nope, you're doing it now.
Summer came early. Sunday, I did a guest spot on at Governor's. It's Sunday, so I didn't get paid for it. But 4 weeks ago, this coming Sunday, will be the last time that I was on stage as a comedian.
Yeah.
And it's got to be 1990, since the last time I went for maybe 89, 88.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's got to be. It's got, you know, and you just sit there going, that's just, you know, people, that's over 30 years. People have a job and retire after 20. And you know what I mean? It's just so odd to me that you're going, wow, 30 years and I have not had that kind of a break. Just less than, it's a month. It's 1 month.
And what's weird is I don't even, like, honestly, I mean, this has made me so happy just hanging out with you guys. But I have been so, like, not fun. You know, like, I don't feel funny. I'm like, when I finally go back on stage, I don't even fucking know what I'm going to do.
I'm nervous about it, too. I really don't. I'm like, wow, is it like riding a bike? I don't know, because I have never gone this. I know what I'm going to read.
Right. Yeah, right now, if you said a topic of one of my bits or I said one of yours, would you be able to just jump in?
I don't know.
I've never not did stand-up this long. It's like, yeah, I remember my act?
Yeah. It's very odd. I was writing a book about, this is actually great, because I was writing a book about the empty, you know, the what it's like to have an empty nest, which I started 8 years ago when Lane first moved out. And then he's been back four fucking times since
Part
then.
Part two.
So I started to write it, and I was really into it, and I was really creative and all this stuff. And then all this shit happened. It's like I haven't even looked at it because it's just a very uncertain time. So, and I'm sure I'll find the funny again. I mean, hanging out with you guys.
You will. I mean, what do you think? You had it tonight. You were hysterical tonight. I mean, it's not like you don't lose funny.
Right.
Thank God. You know, as an athlete, you lose your batting, you lose your pitching, you lose this, you can't run. But you.
Hey, I was an all-state football player. I didn't lose a thing.
But you, how long has Carol been doing comedy?
40 years.
Really?
Yeah. 1979. So, yeah, 41. Jesus Christ, 41.
Wow.
Carol's comedy career is going to be getting AARP soon.
the line I say on stage when I talk about it is that, you know, I've been doing stand-up for 40 years. I could have killed somebody and been out of jail by now.
You'd have more to show for it if you did.
Yeah,
right? With comedy, it's like, man, at least you would have a craft. You
know? I've had cats, man. I'd have fucking prison cats. God damn it.
Yeah, what a shame. And think about how well your dick would have went over in prison.
Woo, baby. I'd have been the fucking captain of the fucking yard, man.
So you, I mean, I think that funny's funny. We'll be funny. The timing might be a little off. There'll be rust.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny, Mark. Like you said that, like, I barely thought about my act since this started, which is
nice. I think most guys most of us who work regularly, when there was like your work's being canceled, we didn't panic and go, oh my God, I got to figure out how I'm going to do my act somewhere. We were all like, okay.
Yeah.
Fine. And you know what?
You mean I get to sleep in?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you know, I mean, this is really important. Everyone I know who I care about, we all have reacted differently. You know, there are some of my friends, like, you know, I also do solo show development and I direct, like, I'm working on a project. Yeah, and I'm working on a project with a young lady, and she was, like, gung-ho for a long time, and she's like, let's do it, and that's fine, you know, while we're doing this stuff. So everyone's different. Some people want to go and do stand-up and do streaming, and good for them. I mean, everyone's trying to cope because none of us, that's the only time we can all actually say, this is the first time ever where we're all in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, should some of the people who are streaming probably shouldn't be because they are one step away from an open micer. But you know what? Go for it.
At risk of sounding crude, I think there's a lot of people who are doing a lot of live stuff. Like this podcast has been around for a while. But
right.
There's a lot of people out there who are just jumping out there now. And I feel like they're doing a disservice to comedy. because they're people are seeing shitty version of comedy because they're bombing in their living room doing stand up to nobody.
Yeah.
And it's going to end up biting them in the ass, because when it's time to get back to the clubs, people are going to have seen them and go, "Ooh, that's rough. I don't know if I want to go see comedy."
Maybe. I don't know. I think that in some ways, a lot of, we're going to have less places.
Oh yeah.
And I think I had a comedy club owner say this to me, that this is going to, you know, kind of, we're going to lose some of the lesser comics, he felt.
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely.
And that,
the problem though is,
a bad thing.
Guys, no, but the guys who have a day job and do this on the side, they're going to stick around because they're not missing nothing.
Right.
So there's going to be a lot of really great young comics who are just starting to find their stride who might get discouraged and leave. And that's a disservice to the next generation.
That's sad. Yeah.
And I'm all about, you know, you guys were good to me. I want to be good to the younger guys. The younger guys need to be good to them. And I think there's a lot of people who are... Yeah, coming from the guy who does nothing but help young comics. Well,
exactly. But you know what? All three of us do that. Because, you know, I mean, when little Mr. Riccadonna over here was a puppy, I took him under my wing. Gina Brion, Liz Mealy. I mean, I still take care of young comics because you have to. You have to
teach the young ones how to be right. I mean, and we just talked about him. We had a whole show about him, and, you know, rest in peace. But Vic Henley was a guy who taught comics the ropes. If you were going to play the comic strip, you had to go through the Vic Henley gauntlet.
Right.
And if you could pass the test and Vic Henley approved you sitting at the bar with the rest of the pros, you were a pro. It's when you graduated to being a pro. And I feel like all the good comics need to teach the young comics how to be good comics.
Yeah.
And we need less shitty comics teaching young people how to be comics.
Yeah, I think that'll happen. I don't know. I think we're going to lose some really bad comics, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
But
we may lose some young guys who are coming up who aren't.
To get discouraged from this.
Because
there's going to be less open mics. There aren't bars and restaurants aren't going to do open mics. They're going to barely have enough people in their room so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, also, I don't know if you saw the thing I wrote on Facebook today, that when we come back to doing comedy, it's going to be a 2-mask minimum. I'm telling you, that's going to be something. People are going to be like, one of the things, like when this first started, I was so happy because I was able to finally wipe the mic down, because you know how filthy the microphones are. Mm-hmm. So I would literally
smelt a microphone?
Oh my God. So I was so happy that I was able to bring wipes up and wipe the mic down. And I'm going to keep doing that, man.
Well, about 20 years ago, I was working with Buddy Fitzpatrick in Albany, and there was the headliner was Mr. Methane. Do you know Mr. Methane? Do you remember
him? Yes.
No,
oh my God, he wore a green suit.
And he used to fart into the mic.
Oh my God.
And that was his whole act. He would fart.
I thought he was only in Britain.
Into the microphone.
He could do songs.
Yeah, he could do. And then he had a whole thing. Like, it was the worst. What an act. And so he was headlining because he had been on Stern with this.
Oh, Jesus.
And it was a 2-show night, and Buddy went up and I went up, and then Mr. Methane came out into his act, and Buddy and I went over to the owner and went, there's another show, right? And he goes, yeah. And we're like, there's another mic, right?
You two ended up with pink eye on Monday.
Oh my God. But that's the thing, like that. And you're going to see a lot of, like this, whenever the lockdown is lifted, people are going to still walk around. They're going to be people in comedy clubs with masks on.
Yeah, just read Facebook. Nobody's trusting what's going on anyway.
Well, let's face it. Hopefully it's all the club owners, because they've been robbing us for years.
Yeah!
Yeah, look who's not going to get any work when this ends.
I am not associated with Richie Byrne.
Yeah, like Richie does work anymore. Come on.
I'm gonna shift gears real quick, and we got to wrap up because we're almost at the 50 mark.
Look at what you did, Carol. This is why we always, if this was in the comic strip, we'd just be like, all right, we're going to end and we're going to do another show.
We're going to start right back up.
Yeah. Right.
But I want to talk to you about your directing. You do a lot of directing. And
yes, I do.
For people doing one-man shows or one-person shows.
Yes.
In theater, any kind of theater, you're a terrific director. And where can people who may be interested in doing that, how can they look you up? And also tell us a little bit about the process of that.
Okay. So the reason I started that was my, I became a director before I created Funny Women, because at 50, I realized that my opportunities are just dwindling. Mm-hmm. So I just started to, I directed Jim Florentine's, special, I'm Your Savior, which is on Amazon Prime right now. And what I do is basically people come to me, like there's two ways to do it. Either you come to me like with a blank slate, and you discuss with me what you want to do. And then I say, okay, that's either a great idea or it's not a good idea. Or you bring a script to me and we go through the script and I basically mold the script into what will become a solo show. Because a lot of comedians think, it's so interesting. So comedians think, oh, well, I'll do a solo show. I'll do just 60 minutes of my act. And that's not a solo show.
Right. That doesn't work.
That's stand-up comedy. Like one of the things I fought with Florentine about was he used to have a mic. He used to have an opening act for the solo show, and he used to bring a mic. He used to have a mic. And I said, okay, now you're just doing stand-up. And it really is a huge difference if you're just out there with
I saw a show in Atlanta at the Laughing School after you worked with it. It was unbelievable. You did an awesome job with it.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, we're all theater people. So a solo show has peaks and valleys. Like I was just working with Don Barnhart from Vegas.
Yeah.
And he asked me to look over his special. And I said, okay, it's good. There's some great bits here, but stop worrying about it being funny. Write the fucking story, and we're all comedians. We will make sure funny's not going to be the problem. You got to write the story first, and that's basically what I do. I basically work with everybody and make the story, and it also has to be. You have to be very careful especially if you do solo shows in New York. You can't do these type of things like, you know, I was a drug addict and I used to blow guys for cocaine and now I'm everything's great because I found Jesus. You can't do that because the critics will crucify you. You can't do this like, well, if you just do this, the sun will come out tomorrow. Because Suzanne Summers
can't be sappy.
And Suzanne Summers came to Broadway and did that and did it sappy, and they destroyed her. So it has to be poignant. It has to be a really good story, and it has to be funny. Right. Yeah, it has to be real. Absolutely.
Right.
And if people want to find me to direct, you can just reach out on all the different social medias. You can reach out on Instagram and Twitter.
Carol Montgomery, National Mom.
Yeah, and then Carol Montgomery Comic is Instagram. You can find me. Believe me, I'm all over the place.
And I got a feeling she'll be back on this show very soon.
Yeah,
like tomorrow.
We got our Alec Baldwin. She needs to come back.
I do have to come back. This has made me so happy. I can't tell you. I think the thing that your audience needs to understand is that as comics, we love to be around each other, and it's killing me that I can't like go through the screen and hug you guys.
Yeah,
no, I know. I know.
And in person, no longer. No more.
No
hugs.
Longer.
That's funny.
Barely a handshake.
When
second base now.
When I did one time I was doing the Richie Byrne show, my friend Sue, who was an actress in it, she came up to me and she said, God, you comics, you're brutal to each other.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and I went, yeah, that's called love.
Yeah. You know, absolutely. Love,
you know? We torture the ones we love.
Yeah.
Yeah, like if we're being nice to each other, then you're like, wow, I guess they don't like me. They must hate me.
Wow, they think that guy sucks.
No, I learned my lesson in Long Island. The first time Downey and Truson brought me out to Long Island, and I got in that green room, and everybody was so brutal. Mm. They were so mean.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm a fucking hillbilly from Ohio. We went out to the car and Trusen was driving me home. He goes, "What'd you think?" And I go, "All those people hated me. They all hated me." He goes, "If they said anything nice, those are the people that hate you."
Right.
And exactly. I go, "Oh, then I guess they like me because they're really mean."
Absolutely.
Our mutual friend, our buddy Joe Starr, when I walked in, he saw that I walked in and he pretended he didn't see me. And he goes down the lineup and he's like, "Blah, blah, 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 blah. Mark Riccadonna. Oh, guess they can't all be comics tonight." And walked away. That's when I knew. That's when I knew.
Carol, thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on.
We're going to kick you out now.
Yeah, we love you.
But I'm going to go backstage.
Stay backstage. Yeah,
stay backstage.
Where you service us for what you did tonight, because we
gave
you a nice plug here.
Yeah, whatever the fuck. You service yourself.
Richie's always sexually harassing our guests backstage. Let's bring Joel out real fast to say goodnight to everybody.
Way to take her out, by the way.
Knock her out. Of it.
That's a terrible sexist joke. I mean, it's the Me Too movement. I make a joke like that, Joey bangs her out before I can.
We're cutting all risk.
Listen, I screwed up. Witch Hunt tonight was part of the whole, and people were supposed to vote on it. Last night, my name was Limelight. Tonight, my name was Witch Hunt.
See if they get it tomorrow.
If you can figure it out tomorrow, you win. What the tie-in is, you win a T-shirt. Limelight, Witch Hunt, there'll be a different name tomorrow. Joe, you got anything you want to talk about sharing?
Well, listen, keep sharing it. Keep commenting. We appreciate all of our fans. We had over 3,500 views. Please keep commenting, keep sharing. Dropping Names comes out every Tuesday. And we have a bunch of other podcasts. Follow Soul Joel TV and buy a hat, buy a shirt, keep supporting us so we can keep providing this for
Burned
free.
Burned out on video, on Vimeo. Video.
Get your VHS.
We were nearly flawless.
I was almost in the 21st century. And
get
I
your VHS and your vinyl album of Richie Byrne.
Richie's first special is available at Betamax. Good night.
That's Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling. Wrapping up the whole. Thanks for listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.